This is a podcast from the Banff Center.
First of all, the people at Year 01 would probably be surprised to think that I'm with them. I'm actually with the organization 01 and the biennial 01SJ, and Year 01 is a different organization. That's okay, but just for their sakes. I apologize I wasn't able to make it here earlier in the week. I don't usually like to come in for partial events, but who would want to miss rain in Banff, so I'm glad to be here anyway. And that's not good. So what I want to do today is basically talk to you a little bit about the biennial that I'm the artistic director of, and talk a little bit about the project that we're doing with Banff, a Locative Cinema Commission, and talk a little bit about the upcoming biennial in 2010 and the theme of Build Your Own World, all in the, trying to get a little bit the context of what we're doing with and for makers, primarily through the example of different kinds of work that we've done and are interested in. So I'm going to start with just a quick, a six-minute overview of the biennial, which I hopefully won't put anyone to sleep, and will give you a sense of the past two editions. Thank you. So obviously there's a promotional aspect to that, but I think it hope it gives you a little bit of sense of the range and scope of kinds of work that we're doing every 2 years, and what I'd like to do in the rest of the time sort of unpack a couple of those things, especially in relationship to the idea of interactive screen. Biennial is consciously multidisciplinary, performing arts. This is a co-commission of a Ryoji Ikeda piece from his Datamatic series. This is a presentation of Builders Association supervision. This is an interactive jazz project with Jason Freeman and a jazz quartet from San Francisco. This is working with design community on creating an interactive cafe. So we work across all disciplines. But I think one of the things for me that's a goal of the biennial was crystallized a little bit when I went to the Sao Paulo Biennial in 2006. And it was a really tremendous biennial, I thought. And it's the first time I'd been in the Oscar Niemeyer building, et cetera. Lots of great projects, The Balloon by Thomas Saraceno and everything else. So a lot of sort of what you might call relational kinds of projects that fit very well within this idea of the field of new media art. But nothing that had a computer with it, a couple of videos, but otherwise sort of almost this sphere of technology. And by the same token, I think when we go to a lot of other festivals on the new media side, whether it's ours or Transmediale or Experimenta, there's often a lack of integration of more traditional media into those programs. And it seems to me in my dealings with makers that, and you can tell me if you feel this is wrong, but your interests are not medium-specific, they're idea-general. And the ideas are often generated very powerfully by artists in lots of different media and fields. And so one of the explicit goals of the biennial, which I'm not saying we've completely succeeded in, is to really look at how we can put together, be a medium-agnostic biennial, be a medium-agnostic festival about the intersection of art, technology, and digital culture in whatever way it's displayed. So we presented these sculptural artifacts by Paul DeMarinis. We commissioned a photographic series by Daniel Faust. We brought in Shiche Huang's Twilight Zone project, sort of sculpture interactive indoors. And also we do a lot of outdoor projects around downtown San Jose. So on the left is Ido Stern's Portal Wormhole Fly-Through, where he presented these short internet animations of wormholes and tunnels in a huge giant sculpture on the campus of San Jose State University in a merry-go-round-sized zoetrope by Peter Hudson. A lot of indoor, outdoor, different media with this goal. And so I think the festival is an interesting format. It's obviously a problematic format. There's a lot of having to negotiate between a very sophisticated artist audience and a not necessarily so sophisticated public audience. And how do you try and bring those two together without going completely over the head and not being of interest to a public, which was a goal of ours, but also not sort of, in a sense, dumbing it down and making it uninteresting to the makers. I think it's a difficult but important role of the platform and the festival and part of what we're trying to do. So obviously there's a curatorial function. We've tried a number of different curatorial models. In 2006, in collaboration with Isaiah, we had 1,800 submissions for presentation. We had a jury of over 200 people who selected those submissions, and then they were presented. In 2008, I selected all of the projects. And in 2010, we formed a curatorial committee from local institutions who will basically select the projects that go in their institutions. I think we're all familiar with the idea of the sort of the curatorial function bleeding, in especially in new media art, bleeding over into production, and that very important role of making these things possible, whether it's dealing with the permits in the public space or finding the right kind of transducer for the electricity, et cetera, running interference, a lot of that. I think there's, of course, a lot of talk in curatorial studies about the curator also being a co-creator of projects. It's actually not a stance that I'm particularly interested in without denying the sort of the strong shaping role that a curator has. But for me, my role is to follow the makers and not in any sense to lead them. The nice thing about a festival is I think it's a potential space of experimentation in a way that a one-month, two-month, three-month museum show can sometimes be difficult with all the complaints about having to come in and change it, or it allows you to have projects that need, fairly constant maintenance for 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 days. And finally, I think, it's really important for any platform, regardless of what kind of platform you're creating, to allow for this idea of transgressive play, that the users create a set of rules that make the platform something different than it was maybe originally intended to be. And so we definitely, expect and encourage, without it being official, people to take advantage of the festival in their own ways and be part of the festival even when they're not part of it, et cetera. I think that's a really critical aspect of when you're creating a platform for makers. There's, we often get, and I often say myself, why do we need another biennial? Fuck the biennial. There's enough of that. The way I like to think about it is based on this Archigram project called Instant City. These are some drawings by Peter Cook of Archigram. And he basically had this notion, this sort of fanciful notion of an instant city before there was a sleeping town. Let's just say San Jose, California. This instant city descends on the town. There's an event. There's a moment of highest intensity, which we can well understand. But I think the really critical part is that do aspects of that highest intensity, do aspects of that instant city infiltrate the networks and the infrastructure of the city and somewhat, in some ways take over and become part of, to mix metaphors, the DNA of that city. So it actually changes the city. Isn't just an instant city parachuting down, but it changes the city. And that's actually really been our experience in San Jose, and I think it's one reason for us to keep on doing this. There was a lot of discussion yesterday about how things are funded. In the United States, there's relatively little government support. We get about 10% of our budget from the city of San Jose. The rest comes from foundations and from corporations. Another interesting negotiation, and individuals. So, as I mentioned, the biennial is consciously multidisciplinary. We actually have a formal track that we call Future Films. But I think, as you saw in that opening set, there are a lot of screen-based projects that are a kind of cinema, a kind of interactive screen that also exist outside of the formal Future Films program. But Anita talked yesterday about Late Fragment, which we exhibited in 2008 with the center. Tony Dove's Spectropia, which is an interactive work where she and Luc Dubois sort of play the movie dynamically, and different parts of the movie and different points of view shift according to their sense of the audience reactions and also their feeling at the time. So it's basically VJ'd. I'm going to play a little bit of a clip from Luke's Fashionably Late for the Relationship. So this is a different project from Spectropia, obviously. So it was a 72-hour continuous performance by Leanne Fuentes. I'm going to jump through some of the initial credits. This is a traffic island on 23rd Street, Madison Square in New York City, Madison Square Park. So for those of you who don't know Luke's work, some of it previously has been to essentially present the history of the Academy Award-winning films in 70 minutes. So he has this algorithm that basically speeds up the film. He creates a generative soundtrack, and Leanne is trying to act in more or less 1/10 time. So when she brushes her hair, she does it for 10 minutes, and it ends up as 1 minute in the film. When she's moving her head like that, many, many minutes. We presented this as both a sort of 70-minute feature-length film straight up in the cinema, and also as a three-screen data-based installation in the museum, where the screens would sort of, Luke had a kind of keywording system for all the shots, and depending upon what was on the main screen, the different screens would come up with related kinds of clips. In other words, a never-ending story. And the story is basically that she's getting ready to go out over the course of 72 hours, as she calls it, her gender maintenance. And the end takes a taxi and goes out of the scene, out of the screen. Really kind of beautiful movie. We also presented projects like Douglas Gayton's 12-part machinima film about the creator in Second Life, called Around Molotov Alva. Short films by, this is one by Daniel Andahar called Honor, that mixes machinima from different games with soldiers' videos from Iraq. Very disturbing and interesting. DJ Spooky's, one of his first presentations of the Terra Nova suite, which he went after a trip to Antarctica. And lots of other screen-based projects. On the left is an installation by Tomiko Teal that's an immersive 3D environment about basically reverse Marco Polo going from Western world to the Eastern world. And on the right is a commissioned project by Kojo that's basically a fantasy about what San Jose is based on his panning of different public images of San Jose. But we do a lot of this work out of the outside of the formal program of feature films, and so I want to show one of the projects that we did in 2006 by Akira Hasegawa called Digital Kakajiku. And this was projected on the Richard Meyer designed San Jose City Hall, which is a kind of bizarre appendage that it actually has no civic function. It's the second largest freestanding glass dome after the Reichstag, but it has no civic function other than rentals for marriages and other kinds of banquet events. And Akira projected his sort of generative camouflage-like projection with 12 projectors onto the dome. I'll let it play just for a minute. So I think you get a sense that you're looking at this projection at one moment, it's sort of a really quite garish kind of camouflage pattern, and you look at it and go, okay, and then you look away, and a minute later it's completely different, but it's a very slow kind of change. It's not a hugely innovative kind of project, but what was really, really interesting to me is when we did the first 01 biennial in conjunction with Isaiah, there was one of the themes was the idea of the interactive city. And there was this kind of theory that the artists and the makers could create work that really changed people's relationship to the city. And this is a somewhat, you know, naive response on my part, but this plaza is basically completely dead and empty after 6 p.m. every night. And during the biennial, you would drive by at midnight, and people had pulled up their chairs, and they were, you know, having picnics, and, you know, the normal rhetoric of talking to each other and creating social relationships and really having a different relationship to the city. And that was a really exciting thing to happen, recognizing that it's, you know, fairly contentless, that it's pretty much spectacular, but still a really interesting kind of response. And that led to a sort of ongoing and continuing interest in especially this idea of public interactive screens. Let me close this. Maybe I'll show you one other example. Besides The Fixed, you saw in the early, but Carolina Sobecka's Wildlife Project, which is a lot of fun. Oops. Or not. So basically, she has these projectors in the back of a car, or a projector that's pointing out to the side and projecting on whatever she drives by. But the tiger or the wildlife are basically running at this more or less, or at least in a relationship to the speed of the car. It stops, the animation stops. It speeds up, the animation speeds up. It's a very ephemeral kind of event. I think in 2006, a lot of people didn't even necessarily see this. But again, I think that's the kind of platform that a festival can provide for more transient kinds of interventions that aren't aimed just at the kind of paying audience who are in a cinema or a theater at the time. So, fast forward to a few months ago, I guess we started talking with Susan and Sherry Frelo at Sundance New Frontiers program about doing a call for locative cinema commission. And partly from my side, based on the kind of experience we've been having at the festival and seeing if there was a way to support it, have people come to Banff. I think you've got a copy of the call in your packages. So what I wanted to do was, in a sense, this is for Susan and I, and maybe this will come up in the conversation afterwards, but to get some responses from people about what constitutes locative cinema. Is Akira Hasegawa's piece, just because it's projected in a specific place, locative or not? Is Carolina's piece a locative piece or not? So I have some ideas, but and I want to show you some examples. So obviously this is past work, not work that has come in. Good thing we have a backup. What? Yeah. So I'm going to play this a little bit large, which will, but it's a smaller film, so that will bring it down a little bit. But sorry.
The traditional role of the public plaza as the device through which Scene, Fruits of Our Labor, is an interactive installation that reinvigorates a city plaza through an alternative form of communication between the general public. It was commissioned by the 01 San Jose Festival and installed in the public plaza in front of the San Jose Museum of Art, facing Cesar Chavez Park. The monolith is a communication device, reminiscent of the ubiquitous obelisks, plaques, and sculptures that populate public squares. These traditional monuments carry messages that sanctify historical moments or a set of values upon which the city has been built. Similarly, Seen, Fruits of Our Labor, looks to broadcast a variety of unshared principles from the mouths of everyday citizens. These deal with their projected hopes and the American dream in light of globalization. The project asks members of three communities that make up San Jose's labor needs: Silicon Valley's tech workers, the undocumented service workers, and the outsourced call center workers, one question: what is the fruit of your labor? Their responses are displayed back to the general public on an infrared LED screen whose content is visible only through the audience's personal digital capture devices. The 8-foot-tall, 4-foot-wide, 18-inch-deep monolith screen is made from black acrylic embedded with infrared LEDs. To the naked eye, it is a blank surface waiting for information to be carved on it. However, when viewed through any CCD device, digital cameras, digital video cameras, phone cams, its messages magically appear on the user's screen. It is only through a digital apparatus that the messages can be read. The audience is encouraged to photograph and share these messages, the fruits of others' labors. What was previously hidden from their view is revealed through the technical device. They become part in the most personal way to this exchange. The traditional role of the public plaza as the device through which citizens and institutions communicate to one another has long been superseded by mass communication, what McLuhan called the electronic agora. Seen, Fruits of Our Labors looks at the potential confluence of these two divergent technologies to reanimate public space. It initiates vibrant interactions between people, sharing their viewing devices with total strangers, discussing the streaming messages, and telematically sending their viewing experiences to others in their phone book. It also brings the voices of the marginalized, like the badly stigmatized undocumented workers, into the public arena and shows them to be no different from any others.
So I love this project for a lot of reasons. But I suppose it could happen in any public space. It's the content that they spent a week or more gathering from local participants that makes it perhaps more locative. This is a project by Ben Hooker and Shona Kitchen called Data Nature. And I don't know, it worked this morning. And I don't have that. So basically, and you saw this in the original clip, there's a kind of spinning call, and then there's a lit button. And when you press the button, it takes a photograph of you and then prints out on basically what looks exactly like an airline ticket various local information, including live information about weather conditions, time of day, et cetera, as well as gathered information about the owls burrowing on the San Jose Airport runways, et cetera. It becomes a kind of memento that it has this visual aspect to it of the specific place at a specific time. This is a project by Marina Zirkow called Paradoxical Sleep. And I'm going to run through it in various directions. She basically used the 26 screens at the San Jose Convention Center to present different animations of the convention center. By the way, this blue tent here is South Hall, 600 feet by 110 feet by 40 feet high or so. And I'll mention that a little bit later. So here, for example, are three screens right in the entrance to the convention center. And these are different shots that she took with her cinematographer of the sort of the raw convention center. And including the outside billboard as well. So she was essentially imagining that the relatively nearby Guadalupe River had flooded, a 100-year flood, and had flooded the convention center and created these animations of both the exterior and the interior flooding, and then presented them on the screens of the convention center itself. So here's that intro triple set of screens again, this time with her animation, and here's an example of the animation. So you can see there's a kind of internal mirroring of the scene within the animation. And the interesting thing, people would be standing looking at these screens and then look around and, you know, look at their feet and wonder if they were being in the middle of a flood or something. Because anytime you see a screen in public space, one, if it's not advertising, and especially if it's black and white, there's a kind of assumption that it's some kind of surveillance. There's a sort of this runs in between advertising on the screens, and then there's a kind of three-set version that just exists outside one of the gathering areas that people can get a slightly more overview of the scene. So people would be looking at this image in front of, I mean, here's a perfect example, the flooded ATM machine right on a screen right above the ATM machine. The other thing that that happened is that in the cinematography, they took all these sort of very mundane kinds of views, like of the air vents, and the HVAC guy at the convention center just loved that scene of the mold coming out of the air vents, because that's the system that he deals with, and no one else pays any attention to it. And that he had a chance to sort of look at his work and seeing it be part of this art project, and a lot of different areas like that, they became kind of unsolicited docents for the project, and people would be looking at it and wondering what the hell is going on, and then often a worker would come up and start to point out things and explain it to them. So I think this is a really fun and successful kind of project infiltrating the system of an advertising medium in the convention center with something that makes people think both about their surroundings, but also for Marina, ultimately, about issues of ecology and global climate change. This is the three-screen version that was at the museum. We did a small installation version as well. Another project was by J.D. Beltran and Scott Miniman. One of the things about San Jose is that the airlines fly directly overhead on the way to the airport. And I skipped over the explanation. So they created a 40-foot screen of these images of the planes in a narrow alley called Fountain Alley. The sound is actually in one of those directional speakers, so you can only hear it standing in one spot. The rest of the 40 feet, it's a silent film. But you walk in this one spot, and this is basically what you'll hear. So I think J.D. and Scott were responding to a very specific feature of the San Jose city in that particular screen project. I would call it locative, perhaps. Jim Campbell's LED billboard or screen was filmed around the corner from where it was located, so it was at least site-specific. He creates a grid of light bulbs that are basically playback a very low-resolution video. And again, I think there was a lot of comments about people trying to figure out where the camera was that was taking a picture of them. It's a kind of odd-looking movie in a public space. It must have some surveillance going on, even though it was a pre-recorded video. This isn't actually done at the biennial, but I wanted to introduce this for the idea of whether the network is a site-specific kind of location. This is by Bill Brown of the Surveillance Camera Players. Ah, that could help. Sorry about that. And he took a play and a project that was done by Denis Beauvoir in Sydney called Amnesia, and he created a short version of it that he played out in front of a specific webcam in Times Square and then advertised that at 12 o'clock he would be doing this performance and that people should log on and, you know, it was a public network and anyone in the world could see it kind of thing. At the time, not so common, now very common. And I don't know why this isn't playing these. Let me just see if I can find that one because it's interesting. Sorry, where'd that go? It's going to be a lot of effort for a 20-second movie. So I think, of course, there's also, you know, a lot of reference here, intentional or not, to some of Heath's earlier CCTV work. And but is the network a site-specific place? Could you create a locative cinema commission in the network? This is a project by Minneapolis Art on Wheels, which is very locally grounded as they go across the country. So what Minneapolis Art on Wheels has done is they've a couple of things. They've created mobile presentation conditions for their projections. Bikes have batteries or solar-powered equipment. And they also work with some of the Graffiti Research Lab research around different kinds of projection. And they basically bike around town, setting up shop to do performances of different members' work, which can be abstract, it can be performative, it can be political, it can be interactive. And again, I think, you know, someone like Raphael Rosanna Hemmer's relational architecture, this notion of getting a very simple, almost shadow puppet kind of projection to get people to interact in a public space is a very interesting kind of endeavor that isn't always successful. When it is, it's very exciting. Minneapolis Art on Wheels. It's a group in Minneapolis headed by Ali Momani. And here's the specific GRL device. So again, I think these are all the kinds of questions that we'll be coming up with in thinking about locative cinema in the permission. This is a project by the Mobile Performance Group. And I'm sure they're very different. Thank you. the idea was that the mobile performance group would wander around San Jose during the day, recording and collecting audio and video segments that were then later mixed in the evening as a location-specific live VJ performance, essentially, using these sort of very funky screens with shopping carts that I'm sure came from the nearby grocery store. They're also creating their own platform that other people are going to take advantage of in their own ways, of course. And taking advantage of Akira Hasegawa's platform to do their own projection. So, in contrast to Hasegawa's use of the City Hall has become a sort of permanent or a very a screen for us every year at the, or every biennial. And this is a project by Camille Utterback called Abundance.
Through the space. During the course of the installation, Utterback added graphic elements and behaviors to Abundance, responding more specifically to the site and physical characteristics of the building. In this version of the piece, white lines in the projection are located over slats in the building facade. As participants cross these elements, moon-shaped graphics are released and travel in a trajectory opposite the person's movement. These flickering nodes become active elements of the composition, releasing further bursts of color when another person moves across them. Another added behavior distinguishes between individuals and groups.
So, probably you know Camille's work. It's the first public artwork she'd done, and basically, as you walk around the plaza in front of the City Hall, the animation changes, making it a very location-specific interactive piece, or at least interactive in that site. But is it location-specific? And Craig Walsh in the most recent biennial, took a slightly different tack on the City Hall aspect. Thank you. He did some research and found out that the site of the City Hall Rotunda is actually the site of the first public concert by the group that then became known as Grateful Dead. And they were, of course, drinking their Kool-Aid and using oil-based projections to create a light and sound experience. And so Craig creates a model of the interior of buildings and then photographs that model and then reprojects the projection from the interior. So it has a very, very much a depth 3D component to it. And over the course of an hour, the psychedelic jungle takes over the City Hall, and it's his homage to the Grateful Dead. This is a 12 projector piece also. And then I just want to end on the sort of the interactive screen part with this project by Adrian Yenik, because I think it combines a lot of different kinds of elements into one project. And I'll just play it for a couple minutes.
SpecFlick 2.0 was filmed and performed at the Martin Luther King Jr. Library in downtown San Jose, California, in August 2006. An example of distributed social cinema, SpecFlick's story unfolds over time and through space in layers of media forms. In this version, set in the library of 2030, live and pre-recorded audio and video were combined with live performances and experimental social technologies. The public library envisioned in SpecFlick 2.0 has been incrementally transformed into the universal knowledge repository known as the InfoSphere. The library building is now a museum for book objects. Librarians, now called InfoSphereans, exist to assist people in locating the bits of knowledge they need in the overwhelming data flow. They also issue reading licenses and teach people about the building's previous life.
I need a digital ID.
You can give me your mother's birthday.
You know what it is?
Mercoledì 9 d'agosto 2030. Io soy el InfoSphere. I have a series of info faces to answer all of your information needs. I will help you access our collection of book objects and book object peripherals, preserved for generations to come and protected from casual borrowing. And I will help you find your way through the labyrinth global infosphere.
And I will assure your compliance with the Software Protection Authority.
Mercoledì 9 d'agosto 2030. The libro had a front cover, a spine, and a back cover. The front cover of a libro often had artwork that was supposed to somehow depict the contents of the book. The spine was a rather delicate and made from...
So there was a live InfoSphereian performing, as well as two other aspects to it. You could text message message your cell phone images, and then a group of students would caption them dynamically onto a different facade of the library. And then there was a 30-minute piece that was a more narrative piece with different actors about the library and wandering through the library. So it became this very distributed cinema kind of work. So that's sort of our different, what we've done the past two biennials with special focus on the interactive screen type of projects and the idea behind the Locative Cinema Commission. In terms of building a platform, in 2010, we wanted to sort of emphasize that, I guess, even more with the theme. For the first time, we're having a specific theme for the biennial called Build Your Own World. And I think it... part of the goal of this is really looking at a way that different kinds of audiences, makers, can produce things that hopefully can change the world, maybe for better, maybe for worse. Also, I think it's partly the nature of digital media that there's this asymmetrical aspect to it, and small groups, individuals, really can make projects that make a large difference. And so we wanted to focus on this as a proposal for the biennial. One of the ways that we're going to do this is collaborating with Media Lab Prado, and you probably have heard about their Interactivos program, where they invite an open call for projects around, in this case, the theme of Build Your Own World, and then sort of different layers of participants join that effort. And I'm just going to play a couple minutes of their explanation of what Interactivos is.
Interactivos is a research and production platform for the creative and educational uses of technology, focused on the collective creation using open hardware and open software. Its goal is to experiment with the use of electronics and software for artistic design and educational projects, thus contributing to the development of communities of cultural producers in this field.
Interactivos is a wonderful opportunity for artists and researchers and students to work together and share ideas and also be involved in a process of creation. I think that's a very important element of the entire series, is the opportunity for people to experiment and collaborate with each other so that they can learn new things and apply them to their artistic practice.
Well, the first thing to say is it's absolutely fantastic. I don't know if people will hear the buzz, the hum that's going on around here, to have so many people all engaged in making these incredible things. We had a conversation last night about how quite often when you try to bring the making of art linked to another discipline of some sort, but that's often a thing, often fraught with problems. But what was being said last night was here are two disciplines being brought together and everybody being very, very engaged.
So Interactivos, we're still trying to finalize our funding for this, but hopefully it will work out. Basically, there's, as I said, a call for projects. 8 to 10 projects are selected, and then there's a call for artists to participate in each of those projects. And they're provided free housing in San Jose. For 2 weeks, they work in a public workshop atmosphere or situation that people can come and see the creation of the work, and then there's an exhibition of the projects at the end of the 2 weeks. So sort of a 3-week quick residency production project around the theme of making your own world. But again, sort of going along with what I was saying earlier about trying to bring disparate groups together, Interactivos is very specifically open source, open culture oriented. We're also going to bring in two other kinds of teams. We're going to invite artist projects to do their workshop for 2 weeks sort of alongside that. And we're also going to invite interesting research groups at places like Nokia or Rockwell Labs or IDEO or universities like any university to also be producing projects during those that 2 weeks side by side. And the brief we're going to give them, we think, will be broadly build your own world, but then we also want to think about the 7 millennium, UN millennium goals of ending poverty and hunger, universal education, gender equality, child health, maternal health, combat HIV/AIDS, environmental sustainability, global partnership, and see what creative activities can be brought to addressing these problems, whether it's solutions or public attention or other kinds of issues like that. So for 2 weeks at South Hall, that huge blue tent that I pointed out earlier will be a kind of amalgamation of open source artists, open source artists who might be working in a corporate or academic situation, and artist collectives who are working very much in the public sphere around education and public art kinds of projects. And that's what we hope to do with 01 in 2010, September 16th through 19th. There's my email. If you don't get to talk to me, please send me your information about your projects. I'd love to know about them, and thank you very much.
A non-programming related, but more operational and organizational development. I just see you got the $325,000 per year for the next 3 years for the organizational strengthening capacity building. Can you tell a little backstory on that?
Where are you?
how you were how you kicked it off and how the Knight Foundation monies what its mandate is to help you advance.
So the Knight Foundation fortunately has an endowment that isn't based on continuing profits from the newspaper. Knight Corporation is a newspaper corporation, one of the largest in the United States. They fund programs in the cities where they have newspapers, one of which used to be San Jose. And so I guess the long-winded, or the, I don't know how to, the simple answer to that in a sense is earlier on I was saying the Instant City becomes part of the network, and so 01 is seen as, for the city, a way to create a cultural environment that's interesting to people who could work at any of these corporations but could essentially live anywhere in the world, Austin, Mumbai, Moscow, et cetera, and why would they want to live in San Jose? So the biennial has this sort of civic aspect to it that's about building up capacity both at an institutional level but also for makers. And so the Knight Foundation is interested in building up cultural capacity in cities where they operate, and because the biennial is now seen as a critical element of the San Jose ecology, they were able to give us a sustaining grant for our operations for the next 3 years. So does that answer your question somewhat?
But also the model of how you launched, New Jersey must have had some significant capital to launch. And does the Knight investment kind of bridge that startup phase to a more maturing phase?
Yeah. So we didn't have significant capital to launch. I mean, we've been operating on a shoestring with a staff of three people since 2004 when I first started as the director of 01. It was a longer existing organization. And each time it's been trying to raise the money and, you know, it's been touch and go. Like I was just saying, we're still trying to raise the money for the Interactivos project. But it definitely was part of the pitch is how can we go from a kind of skin of our teeth organization to something that's more stable, that's more sustainable, that has that makes a difference to a range of audiences, both, you know, individual makers, but also corporate, also government, also institutional, because we collaborate with everyone. And so it will be allow us to have a bump up to four staff year-round, and then we bump up during the biennial year. So, yes, it is part of a strategy to become a more sustainable organization that's still very lean in terms of staff.
Please visit us online at banffcenter.ca.